the ideas, the leaders, the lives that are shaping Denmark and the world. From Blocks Hub in Copenhagen, Denmark, with your co-hosts, Ed Lay and Thomas Molhern, this is Global Denmark.
Hello and welcome back to the Global Denmark podcast, where we explore how thought leaders and innovators are working to create a better Denmark and a better world. Well, we had the pleasure of speaking with Miss Christine Bosse, who is the former CEO of Tryg. She has a distinguished career on many, many boards, including TDC, Cornfoss, the Royal Danish Theatre, among others, and currently sits on boards such as Bank Nordic, Tele Greenland, the GIN, and Bernafon, the Children's Foundation. She has a very long and distinguished career, having been appointed by UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon as an advocate for Millennium Development Goals. She has been consistently rated one of the top female business leaders in the world, and we were very lucky to have a great conversation with her. Among other things, we discussed what is Leadership in Balance, which is, not ironically, a new leadership training program that she's recently launched. In addition, we talked about middle management and their impact on achieving success. We talked about cognitive diversity, specifically gender diversity, and how we can take a look at it throughout the organization. So lots of good stuff. Without further ado, we bring you Christine Bosse. We are back. I am here, as always, with my co-host, Ed Lay. Ed, how's life?
Good. Enjoying the crisp winter weather we're having now.
It is quite crisp. That's a wonderful adjective. And we are joined via Skype somewhere in Denmark. We have Miss Christine Bosse. Christine, can you hear us okay?
Yes, I hear you fine.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
It's a pleasure.
Christine, we want to just dive right in. We know that you recently launched a leadership training course, which I guess in English would be entitled Leadership in Balance. We want to kind of hear from you. What does it mean to be in balance as a leader, and what are you trying to accomplish with this new initiative?
What I'm trying to accomplish is to get especially top middle managers to become more clear on their own personal leadership role. And I use three words. I use the word movement, the word balance, and the word consciousness to actually work around making sure that these middle managers get themselves on board their own personal leadership. It is becoming more and more difficult for middle managers because the pressure is so high, the pressure from all stakeholders, and I'll return to that, but of course also the pressure of time. And technology is putting time on a completely different path than it was just 5 or 10 years back.
Okay, and can we break down what those three words mean? So starting with movement, what do you mean by that?
Movement is about purpose. It's also about making sure that when we want to move organizations, we don't talk about change, because change is something that provokes fear and anxiety, whereas movement is something we do together while we actually hold hands. We accept the fact that something might be slightly provoking or scary, but we help each other rather than work against each other. And this is sort of thinking about the organization. People need to work together on these subjects.
So I can hear that in your definition of movement, it's kind of this collective growth mindset within an organization moving towards a common goal.
Yes. And it's also making sure that the organization itself moves, because every single organization today knows well that if you stay sort of like you are in a fixed position, you're not going to make it. And we've talked about agility. People are understanding the word agility. But for me, it's also about the sort of total movement of the organization, not just talking about being agile, but also talking about the whole organization again as an organism that needs to understand where it's going, not only at the top, but definitely at all levels or areas of the organization. So that's one side of it. The other side of movement is, of course, purpose. You have to know that there is something more going on than just making sure your P&L is where you want it to be. And that actually travels directly into balance, because in balance, we work with stakeholder approaches. We don't sort of carve out potential investors or customers or employees. We work with that as a total. We need to make sure that we service all stakeholders in the organization. And then, of course, also in the balance, you also have the fact that you service the communities that you are in. This is not the classical CSR where you have a sort of glitter version of the annual report, but this is directly into what you're doing. You have to also make sure that there is a point for the society, and not just with the customer thinking, but also with the society thinking in the way you work. And then finally, consciousness, making sure that you're actually conscious about what you're doing. And here, of course, the pace and the time factor is such a big issue for middle managers today, that if you don't have a practice where you actually stop and think, is this really the right way to go forward? Is this really the right way to do it? Then you might end up thinking, you know, this was completely wrong. We should have stopped early, and we should have done this differently. And that is what I'm trying to aim, that people are conscious about these three subjects that we spoke through, and that they work with that on a personal level.
That's really interesting. So you have balance, movement, and consciousness. I think it was interesting for me hearing about balance in terms of giving it back to the community as integral. I know that you were very involved with the Millennial Sustainability Goals. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah.
Is that kind of been incorporated into that balance approach you're talking about, your career in terms of the sustainability goals?
Yes, that's exactly right. And in there, we're working with the global sustainability goals, not as an add-on, but as a how can I say it? It's like a basis for your leadership nowadays. It's not something that you have to sort of, oh, I must read a book on this. It has to be embedded in you personally. You have to feel that this is the right way to go forward. You have to understand why this is the modern way of leadership. And you have to be very much aware that the next generations, they will not just ask for this as, you know, are you also engaged in the SDGs? No, they will look for companies who are pushing this agenda as part of their core business.
And we're talking about middle managers here, and I know a number of middle managers or some middle managers might say that they respond immediately to the pressures from above and below, essentially. How do you teach a middle manager to work with the communication both downwards and upwards so that they can feel like they can take this time?
This is a wonderful question, and this is exactly in the mud, so to speak, where it is difficult. And if you take some of the big corporate scandals, or you could also say organizational scandals, around our part of the world recently, I'm sure that there were a lot of top managers who would have appreciated that there would have been a much louder cry out from some middle managers saying, this is not what we're going to do. Let's take Volkswagen with their cheats, the emission counting. I mean, how much did it not damage Volkswagen? It cost a lot of money to get out of that position again. So I'm quite sure that if top management think about this in a way that they say, probably we're not going to be able to think every corner through, we will be depending on middle management to say yes, and to say, how can I say it? Constructively, no. It's not a no like, you know, I don't want to do it. It's a no like, this is not going to work. This is going to be damaging for us and for our brand and for our reputation and what have you. And of course, this is not easy. I don't pretend that it's not going to, you know, cause some kind of friction, but I think friction is necessary. And I think that big corporates will have a huge wake-up call if they don't start to think about this constructive friction as something that they really need. They need to call for it to make sure that they don't find themselves in positions they don't want to be in.
Now, how did you land on this kind of level of the organization? Obviously, you've been group CEO of Tryg and served in numerous boards and at the top of the pyramid, if you will. What was the inspiration for kind of targeting in on the middle management?
First of all, I of course spent half my career in Tryg as a middle manager, so I know that the situation for middle management is the tricky one. But then during the last 10 years, I've done a lot of work with organizations, with leaders, and really understanding that the situation they are in when we talk about, you know, you've got to stand on your two own feet and say, this is not the way forward. The pushback from middle managers is this is very, very difficult. And this is exactly what is making it extremely more stressful, actually less interesting, because, you know, it's not nice if you are not listened to. And then, of course, something that I know that we might also touch upon, the fact that I have always been questioned about the blend of male and female in organization, and especially in leadership positions. Mm-hmm. I decided that I wanted to attack this debate on how do we overcome some of these stressful situations, some of this sort of good behavior is always saying yes. How can we combine mm-hmm. that with diversity thinking and onboarding with greater diversity? So that was also partly a piece of inspiration, yes.
Well, I want to pivot back to that, but I know Ed wants to say something.
But why is it that middle managers don't speak up, do you think? Why is it that they do just say yes?
I think it's a combination of many things. First of all, there is one big driver for this, and this is remuneration systems. Remuneration systems where you are paid, you know, either half of your salary or even 25 or 30% of your salary is a kind of bonus, where you might feel yourself pushed that you know, you need to get these figures, you need to deliver this or that, and you don't actually give yourself the time or the inclination to actually think about, is this correct? Is this right? So definitely aggressive remuneration systems is partly one of the explanations. Another explanation is that the total competition globally is just increasing. This goes, of course, for companies, but it also goes for individuals. And competition is, for many, many, many reasons, a fantastic thing. And it brings out a lot of innovation and a lot of new thinking. But it also has an element of, you know, it can be taken to a level where it becomes counterproductive to where you really want to go. And you skip all the crucial things in an organization to get there fast and to get there first. And that, I think, everybody needs to work with. And again, if I boil that down to the next level, it's about, do we think long-term or do we think short-term? And we need to get more long-term thinking into our organizations.
And you think that kind of rethinking the remuneration packages for middle management could be a step in the right direction in achieving that?
I think rethinking your remuneration packages on a total debate should on our radar, yes.
Do you think that organizations need to look at the job description of middle management and say that, it, you know, you're the people on the ground, so to speak, and we're looking for you to push back and tell us the things that won't work and disrupt as much as we are looking for you to execute and make these things happen?
definitely right. I mean, I would never encourage anybody to step into middle management unless it was part of your role that you and you were sort of encouraged to tell top management about what's really going on. So no lies, no fibs, no nothing. Be allowed and even encouraged to speak up and to bring forward what's going on the classical ground level of the organization.
Christine, you mentioned it before in terms of the middle management and the diversity strategy. What do you see as one of the core differences between middle management and top management in the Nordics in terms of gender diversity and that how that impacts companies?
Well, you see, I was an HR director for 5 years, and that was sort of my career path into top management. And during all these 5 years, it was like early 90s to late 90s, sort of that middle of the 90s. In all the years I was there, it was always puzzling me why everybody agreed on the fact that if you have a group, it could be in a call center, it could be a management group, middle layer, it could be any group of people in an organization. Everybody agreed on the fact that blending male and female was creating a better organization, a better environment, better results, everything. Everybody agreed on that. That exact same idea or the facts that lead to it goes, of course, also for executive management. But the logic stops outside of the executive's door. And this is not right. This is simply not correct. Of course, if you have an executive management, it's composed by people. And the same logic travels directly into that part of the organization as for the board. So when you buy into the fact that men and women make a difference together, mm-hmm. exactly the same logic goes for top executives.
So what stands in the way? What's the main barrier that you've kind of seen throughout your career? The logic kind of stops at the door.
Well, it's many things. If let me start at where I think I've ended as my main argument, and that is that you obviously look when you place in positions people that you have in preference, you look for somebody that would handle any case similar to what you would do yourself. That's your sort of favorite benchmark. You know, I would do it exactly that way, so this is probably the right way to go for. Let me give you an example. A good colleague of mine who was a CEO of a large company here in Denmark really enjoys it when the wind is blowing, and then I won't go any closer. we are in the same network, and he's now the former CEO. But we were in this workshop together with Barbara Annis, who is a researcher in these subjects. And while she was going through the subjects, he suddenly said, "Oh, now I get it. When I'm interviewing my next colleague on the executive board level, and it's a male, and I ask him, what would you do in this specific situation? And he goes on saying, you know, I would get rid of this part of the business. I would lower the costs with 10%. I would blah, 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 blah. And then he says, correct. This is exactly what I would do. And then comes the women to the woman to the interview, mm-hmm. and she might say, you know, I would start out by having a good process with the employees. I would try to understand the dynamics together with some partners, and then he's lost. He doesn't hear the rest because right. it's not the way that he would do it. And this is for me the real barrier. It's not because there's something wrong with men, or that they are in any way sort of biased because of prejudice or so on, but they just do not get the fact that they need something different around them. And that is where I think, you know, headhunters, search people, boards on a broader level, everybody needs to think about that bias that we all sit with at the end of the day.
Yeah, I think that's really well stated. And you see that kind of confirmation bias of, and it kind of goes opposed to what you were saying in the beginning with that collective movement, because it seems to imply a fixed mindset in a way.
Yeah, but a collective movement is not with a fixed mindset. This is where it becomes complicated. But you have to, this is why I'm talking about it as an organism. You have to look at the organization as an organism, that you have to also at the top level, you have to let go. It's not fixed. The goal is not saying, you know, we have to be exactly here in 3 years' time. It's a goal, but it's a moving target, you could even say. And of course, yeah, that needs to go with the other state.
So the advice to men in senior positions is check your cognitive biases. Would your advice to women be speak to the cognitive biases when looking to advance your way up the chain?
Yes, probably. And then I would also add to both genders, actually, I would add, make sure that when you form groups, you don't form a group of leaders. You form a leadership group. That's a completely different body. And when you look at really successful organizations, this is exactly where they make a difference at the top level. They work seamlessly together. They have the same ambition for what they're doing. And that drills down into the organization. And there it filters in beautifully that you, of course, have a combination on gender and could also be other areas, age and competences for sure.
Okay, so it's less about the level of the organization. It's more about the personal competencies throughout to create this natural cognitive diversity.
It's the idea of the basic logics in the organization has to travel up.
And how do we identify here someone who is just, to use the word meaning only, just a leader, and someone who is someone who's capable of creating a leadership team or being part of a leadership team?
That is of course how you look at the individual. You have to be, the way that I've done it is that I've always made sure, we're back to remuneration slightly, that you're remunerated on a group basis as the main part of the remuneration, and you're also a hero in the team if you say, okay, I will stop going for that resource pool. I will accept that it is more obvious for my colleague to have some of the IT resources, and I'll hold back. That kind of behavior should be really, really remunerated, not only financially, of course, but also in the way it's spoken about.
Okay, so there's not a type of individual that's either a leader or part of a leadership team, but it's what you motivate them towards.
Yes, and it's how you think about the leadership team as a team, yes.
Back to one of the pillars there of consciousness. Why is that one of the three main segments, in your opinion, for achieving this balance?
Because what I have seen and what I have met, especially recent years, is a lot of unconscious leading, where you actually do not really reflect. You don't spend enough time on thinking. Because the speed is so extremely much higher than just a few years back. The level of information is, yes, also higher, but you need to also allow yourself to spend time on thinking. Yeah. And that is just a scarce resource, in my opinion, and we need to encourage especially middle management, and they are the new top leaders, of course, to allow themselves to think.
How are we taking this, let's say, 60 hour a week middle manager, 70 hours maybe, and then saying, I'd like you to add on some thinking to your to your current workload. What does that look like? And do you face that pushback often?
Yes, exactly. But we need to get the 60 or 70 hours down. That's the first step.
I hear you.
37.5 at its demo.
Write that down.
It is not done for a leader to because you burn out. I mean, unless you have that as part of your ambition, then it's fair enough if you want to burn out sort of mid-40s, late-40s.
every young man's ambition, yes.
Yes, but if you want to be, you know, it's also about being a total human being. And often when I've sat down with managers that I have mentored and we've looked at the calendar and we've looked especially also at the mailbox, and I say, why are you getting these 200 mails? They've got nothing to do with you. What is this? And it's because people tend to think, I just want to be, you know, copied on this. Mm-hmm. No, you don't want to be copied on this. You want to be informed if it's something that you really should know. And this is back also to responsibility and to have an overview of what you're doing. So we start by reducing the calendar, reducing the mailbox, and then we suddenly find that these people will be able to have a workload of a normal workload would be maximum 50 hours. Then you can for weeks or perhaps even a couple of months go up to 60, and then you go back to the level of 50. And then you can also think.
Excellent.
So what is the perceived job description of a middle manager at the beginning? And then what is their perceived job description moving to in order to facilitate this extra time and thinking?
The original job position would be, you know all, influence all, make sure that nobody is stabbing you in the back or fooling you if it's your own people that are reporting to you. And where you arrive when you've got through this is understanding that you are a facilitator. You're facilitating other people to become the best person, you know, the best version of themselves. Mm. That's your role. And then, of course, to some extent, you have to be a goalkeeper to make sure that, you know, there's nothing, no damage happening. But you're a facilitator, that's your main role, and that your organization is actually carrying you, not the other way around.
That's very well said. Well, Christine, mindful of the time, and I think this is a great place to take a quick break, and then we will come back with our quick fire round to wrap up the podcast today.
Studying for an executive MBA at Henley Business School in Denmark is an intense and rewarding experience. If you want to achieve the best possible outcomes in business and in life, Henley can give you the skills and knowledge you need through the Henley MBA. For more information, visit henley.dk.
Okay, we are back with our quick fire round. The questions will be quick fire. Your answers don't need to be. Do you have any habits, routines, or rituals that you do on a daily basis to keep yourself either mentally or physically sharp?
I have a big dog, and I walk her every morning, and I end my long walk with the dog with a swim in the sea. I do this summer and winter.
Wow. So you're one of those Viking bloods that jump in the water when it's freezing?
Yeah. And we are many nowadays. So, but it's a good routine. And it's in many ways something that sharpens your senses.
Can you tell me a little bit about that? Because as someone that's never taken the plunge, as we say, into the icy waters, sure. what does it do for the system? And how do I get myself to jump in?
I can tell you, first of all, I think that the beauty of nature and different experiences in nature, and that can be anything from a walk to, for some people, climbing in mountains or whatever. But what nature gives us is a place where we can actually recover, where we can have that moment of peace in our heads, where we can just be human beings there and then. And that might sound strange, but if you look into also latest science on the diagnosis of ADHD and mm-hmm. you know, different things where people suffer from not really being able to concentrate. Getting that nature under your skin is very, very important. That is exactly what winter swimming does. You don't swim. I mean, I'm not in the sea for 2 minutes or anything like that. Right. I'm on and then I'm up and then I'm in warm clothes immediately after. But it wakes up your body and it wakes up your mind. And mind and body really does connect. We forget that sometimes, and especially in these environments where we go to our workplace, we sit at our desk, we talk on the phone, we go on the net, we are online always. Mm-hmm. And especially being not connected with anything else than yourself and your body and nature, that's exactly what you get. So in you go next time you have the opportunity.
All right, I'll take.
What do you notice between, let's say, have you had any periods of time where you haven't been getting in the sea, and then periods of time when you have consistently? What's the contrast between the two there?
It's the ability to concentrate, and it's the ability to, it's happiness. It's just well-being and happiness. Mm. When I was a CEO and I on a regular basis went to New York, London, Frankfurt, other places to present our equity story for potential shareholders and existing shareholders. Sometimes when I've been in New York 2-3 days and I couldn't see the horizon, I was sort of in and out of a limousine and in buildings, upstairs, downstairs, out again, and there was no horizon, no wind, no friction, no nature. I felt depressed. And this was not, you know, it was a good case that I was presenting, so it was not because I felt let down by investors, but I felt depressed, and I that my capability to concentrate was declining. So yes,
it was kind of a direct quote.
Yeah.
Kind of.
I'm going to get this, the
serotonin level, or is it the endorphins that are released if you jump in the sea?
You get your own endorphins. It's not. It's not like anything. Superstitious or anything.
Yeah.
It's pure nature.
Perfect. I'm going to pivot a little bit. Have you ever undergone any event or experience that you would credit with a huge leap forward in your performance or the person you've become?
Where you say something that I have experienced that was sort of crucial to me?
Yeah, maybe a defining event for you. For your career or the person you become?
Oh, that's a big question. I guess the two things. The fact that I was blessed with living in a sort of dual culture environment as a kid, blessed with parents that encouraged me to debate and to take positions, you know, to actually have a meaning about different things early. That was definitely defining. And then I would say, and this is in the more sad side of my life story, the fact that I lost my mother when I was 27, that made me mature very, very fast. And that, I think, took me into management faster than I would have done otherwise.
Could you maybe, we talked a little bit off air about, I believe you said you're half British, half
yes.
Danish, or Danish and British, if we want to say it like that. What impact specifically, because we talk to people all the time about, you know, the podcast is dedicated to teaching lessons to and from Denmark. Has that helped you in terms of your cultural perspective or be able to think outside of the kind of the Danish box, if you will?
Yes, but it's two-sided, I'll have to admit that, because I really and truly lack understanding of people who, for example, can think that it's totally unbearable not to eat pig, you know.
Yeah.
Some people in this country would find that completely unbearable. For me, that is not anything to do with identity. So that's the handicap side of it. The positive side of it is that I was always a very open and curious person. So if somebody comes along and says to me, you know, we could also do it like this, I would also say, oh, yes, of course we could. You know, I'm open to new ways of thinking. And I'm quite sure that when I deep down into my psychology, I find that this was, of course, the fact, because nothing was the only way of doing anything when I was brought up. There was always several ways. We could have shepherd's pie, we could have meatballs, Danish fricadels, you know, we could have egg and bacon, we could have the Danish breakfast rolls. There was many ways and I'm sure that has affected me.
Well, I'm getting hungry now, and I think that ambivalence, you know, I talked to my daughters, both Danish and American, and I talk to a lot of people all the time, and I think it does create openness, that ambivalence, when you kind of have multiple nationalities and identities. Yeah. And curiosity. Yeah, thank you.
Do you have a personality trait that that makes the direction that you want to go in with your life more challenging, and how do you deal with that? So.
Oh, definitely. I mean, the reason I stopped as a CEO was because I felt that horrible, boring sentiment around me with, you know, quarterly reports, annual reports, IT plans. And I just thought, you know, I'm not going to be the best CEO for this company if I don't get out, because it's boring now. I need to do something else with my life. So yes, definitely. And sometimes I also give myself tasks that are very, very difficult to get at, and I can feel that it actually energizes me. It's also sometimes, annoying, because I think, oh, why did I do that again? You know, sometimes, of course, I also need to relax and be with my family and enjoy life in other ways and means. But it does give me energy to do difficult things and solve difficult topics and tasks. Yes.
I think that pivots nicely to the next question. And that was, what is your biggest motivator and maybe demotivator on the negative side?
My biggest motivator is, and will always remain, to do something either in business or some of the voluntary work that I do where I feel that I can make a difference for a lot of people. And I do tend to be more worried about the people who find life difficult and challenging than people on the sunny side of the streets. I'll have to admit that. And that's even because I'm a very liberal person. You know, I believe in business, I believe in innovation, and I believe in you know, people's ability to set up their own business and do things with their lives. But I have also seen enough to make me worry about the social side of what's going on in society. And that is the driver for me, no doubt about it.
Yeah, I saw that you are, I don't know if you currently are, but you're on the board of Bernafon, or the... The children, the Children's Fund.
Yeah, I'm chairing that NGO.
You chair.
Yeah.
Okay, and just maybe briefly for our audience, what is it that that work involves?
That work involves working with sponsors on a private basis and big corporate sponsors, and also the Danish government within the plan organization to make a difference for the most vulnerable people in the world. And with a special focus on girls' rights.
Fantastic. Well, thank you for doing that work. That's terrific.
Mm. What's something weird about you?
Weird about me?
Yeah. Oh.
Something you haven't revealed before.
I'm probably a funny mixture. People tell me that, actually, that work close to me. I'm a funny mixture of a very structured person and a very unstructured. In some ways, I hate structure because it ties me down. Mm-hmm. But I am also, you know, people can burn themselves slightly because underneath that slightly not structured personality, there's also a lot of structure. I think that's that, and it is a contradiction. So that's probably slightly weird. Yes.
How does the unstructured part play out? Do you have a room in your house where you throw all the mess? Or
you should see my desk.
Send us a picture. We'll put it on the website.
I know where everything is, but I have these piles and they grow and then I get rid of them suddenly and then it's clean desk, but then it builds up again. I mean, I really, really envy the people who could have clean desk because I know it helps your mind to concentrate, but I have to winter swim. Otherwise, it's that's my way of doing it.
Okay, we're back to that. Now, has it always been like that since you were a girl, or is this a new phenomenon?
No, I've always been a mixture just there. No.
All right. Well, we know it's when we're recording this julefrokost season here in Denmark.
Yeah.
And if you were invited to a julefrokost or a dinner party, who would you invite if you could choose two people from history, alive or dead, to sit next to you and why?
Oh, my God. I would definitely, without any doubt, just two. I need three.
Ed, can we give a dispensation?
Go on, three.
All right, in the season of giving.
Okay, I need my mom and dad and my grandmother on my father's side. I mean, they were without any doubt. If I could wake them up and just have an hour's conversation with them, that would be the most fantastic thing that could ever happen. Yeah.
Fantastic.
And there's everybody who's mentioned Barack Obama. And Nelson Mandela for the last 20 weeks of now going, oh God, I should have said that.
But you know what? I guess some of this, and please don't misunderstand me, but I've met some of these people, not Barack Obama, I would love to meet him, but I've met famous people, big politicians, and they're nice, they're just people. But, you know, nobody could ever replace these three key people of my life. And that's why I mentioned those.
That's more sense.
What's the best piece of business or life advice you ever received?
I guess the best, it depends on timing, but on an overall basis, I think the best piece of advice I met, and I constantly use it, is to be yourself. Don't try to pretend to be anybody else. Sometimes you have to pretend in a situation where you have to overcome. If you are actually sad and you have to not be sad, then you can, you know, play that role. But don't ever try to play a different person than who you are. I think that's very important.
Yeah, the authenticity, yeah. Did you have a teacher or mentor when you were growing up or earlier in your career that had a big influence on your life?
I had several. And apart from the people that I'm now having a julefrokost with, it would be like the first CEO that I worked under. His name was Sting Rode, and he was like very, very much ahead of his time in the way that he was thinking about organizations and people and everything.
What was his name again? I'm sorry, I missed that.
Sten Rode.
Okay.
He stopped at Tryg when he was, I think, when he turned 60 or 63, and he just stopped completely his career. So he's not a very well-known person in Danish business, but he was, for me, a very, very big source of inspiration. And then I would say also my first person I reported to, and he was also the one to give me the first sort of managerial position. He was a tough guy, but soft inside. And you know, we liked each other a lot. And he was also definitely an important mentor for me. And I actually said to him before accepting my first position as manager, I said to him, I've got one thing that you have to give me. And he thought it was money. And And I said to him, you have to accept that I will come and ask you questions where you will be very annoyed with me, because you have to understand that I don't know and I need to learn from you. And I could see many times in the years ahead that he was very annoyed with me, but he never said it.
Fantastic. And that kind of dovetails back to the key to, you know, the organization moving is kind of either having the explicit or kind of tacit permission to question and to challenge those above you, right?
Yes. And I remember once, and I can tell you that story because, you know, I knew he had my back, and I was only 28 or 29, and I stood up for myself and for the organization, and I didn't want to underwrite an agreement with the IT area because they said I had to underwrite it because, or to sign it rather than underwrite, to sign it because now the tests were over, and I said the system is not ready to go. And it was a big dispute, and I had a row with the IT, head of IT, and it was horrible. But I stood my grounds, and of course, when they let it go live, it was a disaster because it was not ready to go. And that was, I only dared do that because I knew I could trust him, my closest boss. So, and it was, at the end of the day, it helped my career because, of course, the CEO, the guy I just spoke about, he said, who is this woman who said we shouldn't do this? And of course, that was helpful at the end of the day.
What book or books have you most gifted or been most influenced by?
Definitely in recent years, I have to mention Jan Guillou and the book called Brobyggerne in Danish. And I don't know the English, but I guess...
Bridge builders,
yes. It's about what was going on in the 30s. Like, how was it to live through the 30s? What happened with you know, National Socialism, the Nazi system suddenly appearing? And what were people thinking? Real people, not just like a history book. And that is very, very interesting and slightly scary reading. I think that's the book that's made the biggest impression lately on me.
And does it take place in Germany, or is it from a Danish perspective?
It's from it takes place in Norway.
Norway, okay.
There's a view on Denmark, Sweden, Norway, Germany, and Great Britain.
Interesting. Well, we'll put that book up on our page for you. Christine, we are going to wrap up the podcast today with one final question, and we ask this to all of our guests. And that is, what do you think Denmark can teach the rest of the world? And what do you think Denmark can still learn, as you are a CEO and top leader who's out in the world quite a bit? So what can they teach and what can they still learn?
Definitely on the teaching side, we bring a lot to the table concerning modern leadership style. The fact that we actually acknowledge competence, we acknowledge the more flat organizational structure, less hierarchy thinking is definitely something that we can bring to the table. We cannot do it alone. So again, you will know that from my bio, I'm very insisting on we do it in Europe, because otherwise it will not have an effect on the whole world. So we do it. We put our sort of effort to make a difference together with others in Europe, and then it can affect the whole world. On the learning side, definitely that, you know, Denmark is good, but other people, different thinking, other ways of doing stuff, other ways of living is equally good. And we should never, ever let, you know, this Denmark is all like America first, Denmark first, everything else is less important. That is a dangerous bug, and we should get over it quickly.
Excellent. Christine, before we go, Where can our audience find you? Or where can maybe some top middle managers sign up for your new Leadership and Balance course?
They can go to our homepage, and it's called ledelseibalance.com. And there they can show interest, and then I'll have a talk with them, and they can check out also on the webpage whether it is something that they would like to be interested in.
Yeah. And is the program in Danish and English? Is it where is it?
First time we run it is in Danish, and it is mentoring in Danish, and then we go away to Greece, and then we come back for more mentoring and networking. But some people have already said to me that I should also think about doing it in English language. So I'll have to think about that.
Christine, thank you so much. We really appreciate this conversation.
Thank you. Thank you. Likewise.
And to our audience, don't forget to jump over to wherever you get your podcasts, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher. Subscribe, rate, review, help our podcast continue to grow as we're over tens of thousands of downloads now since we started over a year ago. And until next time, see you on the GDP.
Are you getting the most out of your time in Denmark? Pick up the printed copy of the English language newspaper Copenhagen Post today to access relevant news and event information guaranteed to enhance your working and family life.